So I thought I'd take a break for a couple of minutes, folks at the table, and
sure.
How'd you, just a chance for people to stretch for a couple of minutes and then go on to part two.
Okay, fine. And
I'm sorry.
Yes,
I know we have all morning basically for this committee meeting, but I feel that there are some very big issues that have to be raised during this meeting. So I would just soon continue and not take a break so that we can get your
Sure.
So that we have time to get to all the other things.
Well, let's take a minute for any members of the committee or board or staff to raise any questions that they might have that might have occurred to them thus far. I mean, you spoke, for instance, that this is coming out, the competition in the car, but there's no reason to believe that that will be forever by any means. If they're manufacturing sets for cars, how long can it be before we'll have little Walkmen or whatever, walk persons or whatever, to pick this up at home or while we're walking down the street or taking the bus to work?
Probably not far. The XM is working mostly with boombox and portable stereo types, things that you would take out to camping or that you would carry along. The device that's going to sit on your car, the antenna, couldn't find an actual picture of one of the devices, is about that big, and it suction cups to the back of your the inside back of your windshield, sort of like where the upper brake light light is. It'll stick up there, and then either be wired, it might actually just be infrared to the receiver. You might just be stick this here, and you're up and running. So XM has, because of that, incorporated it into some trial models of portable stereo units. Problem with Walkman and things that you get really portable, devices that you would use indoors, then you would lose the signal. So there's a little bit of technical problem there. So I don't necessarily know if you'd be listening to satellite radio while you're on Stairmaster at the gym, but you definitely could be listening to satellite radio while you're fishing or sitting on the beach or camping. So there's a little bit there. But I don't think it's long. I mean, they are XM has built that in, but not as a major part of the strategy. Anyone else? Hey, Jim.
Yeah, Steve, you talked about the fact that they're allowing XM to do things like translators for getting their service into areas that are blocked by size of limits and whatnot, but it seems like they're not allowing that for FM radio. Translators back for FM.
Gee, no, I don't, and I think that might be a spectrum issue. Because where the satellite goes it's a different spectrum. So.
Tomas?
Yes, Steve. A few minor things and then one question for you. You made a point about the one thing we don't want to do our listeners is to have them turn their dial. You know, I'm more comfortable with what we don't want our listeners to do is to consider irrelevant in the sense that, you know, the amount of time that they're on the dial is important to us vis-a-vis how that affects donations and that kind of stuff. But it's certainly much more true in the commercial side that we care about exactly how many minutes they're there as to their import of how valuable they find our station. I think that's an important philosophy in the Pacific family that we want to keep in mind. Let's remember also, and I think it's a terribly important to understand the technology, but when we say 56% of the people have internet access, that does not reflect at all in terms of people who have streaming audio access, which requires a high band throughput, and for wireless would require much more. Certainly, for me, very wealthy people are going to be able to have it right away, but it's not necessarily streaming audio capability unless you have a cable modem. It's not necessarily something you want to do. Online Americans listen less, but online Americans also have less sex and a whole bunch of stuff. It's a matter that, you know, they're on the web, so they're doing a lot less of other things. I'm not sure that that's going to affect our donations. I guess my question with this big picture, and I'm interested in your perspective on this, is that the bottom line of these technologies is one of two possibilities. Either we're saying, look, you know, we're just preparing so that we can be part of that content. Either we can be part of the internet or we can be part of radio satellite, i.e., can Pacifica play a role doing content for this stuff? Or if we're not in that business, or another possibility is to say, look, this is coming, let's brace ourselves for possible influx of competition that's going to drown our potential listening audience.
And in each of those scenarios, we either say, well, we're just like who we are right now, and let's either hope that they'll buy our content, for example, let's try to sell them Democracy Now or something like that, or we say, no, we got to change our content in order to appeal to this potential carrier, to a satellite or to the internet or what have you. Or in the case of, again, if we're just going to wait and see what happens and we're bracing for competition, either what we're saying is, we like our product, let's stay as is, you know, let's hone in on the values that we consider strong, like, you know, the real message that programs like Democracy Now! do, or we're saying, no, we don't like that content, we think that content might not compete well, let's change it. So that's really the actionable things that us as a board are going to have to think about in terms of, do we enter that market, do we try to provide content for it, or do we just brace ourselves for competition? In either of those scenarios, do we like who we are, do we understand who we are, or are we proposing a path of change? You know, I want to hear your perspective on that.
Well, you know, I like who we are, and I think that's why I came here. I think that one of the things that I, one point, and I'm glad that you brought the question up, because it got me to a point that in rehearsal I made, but you know, dress rehearsal never works out when you're on stage, is that our local content and the fact that we have a lot of content. We have content people want, and we know they want it because they listen, because we know we have an audience. If people really didn't want our mission and our message and didn't understand it, we wouldn't have the audience that we have now. The fact is that we have to take that audience that we have now, and we have to bring it. I think my feeling is that we have to do good broadcasting, technically, editorially. Now, that's not saying change the mission of content. That's about making sure that people are identified correctly. It's about being the best radio content organization that we can be, and the best content that we put out there in line with our mission. We then can take that to these new technologies and incorporate and these new platforms and distribution things and all this jargon that people throw out there. And we can then then adapt it. And when I mean adapt it, I don't mean change the content or change the message. I mean, you know, is it one of the things that, you know, in the internet, people only listen for a few minutes. They don't necessarily listen for a whole hour. So how do we then, maybe one of the things that we need to think about is, you know, the Democracy Now! 3-minute segment. And that is something that we are able to get out on the internet a lot farther, so that we can have more people hearing our message and our content and understanding what we're all about.
But that would be a different program from Democracy Now! You're saying somebody else starts producing a Democracy Now! Like segment.
It might be. I mean, I won't use Democracy Now! As an example, but no. I mean, the idea is that we have to remember, because you said you used the word content provider, and that's exactly that's the most important thing to be right now. But in my opinion, and which is why the National Program Director position at Pacifica was so exciting to me, is because we have so much content coming out of our 5 stations and from our affiliates as well. We have more than NPR and PRI. You know, I mean, one of the things, I'll be honest, you know, one of the things that NPR especially is finding very difficult is all of a sudden they woke up and realized they had 2 24-hour, 7-day-a-week radio stations that they had the program, and they didn't have enough shows. When the members said, no Morning Edition, no All Things Considered, you can't roll it over for 4 hours, there was this big silence in the building when they sat down to fill in the grid, because they didn't have that. So we're in a lot of ways very well prepared and positioned to sort of incorporate these technologies and use them to bring our message out to a wider group of people. So I'm hugely excited about that opportunity. I think, you know, to get there, one of the things that we have to do is prevent tune-out factors on the radio now. Since our funding comes, you know, primarily from our listener support, and we know that people listen to the radio for a variety of reasons, or conversely, don't listen to a radio station for a variety of reasons, we need to remove the reasons why they don't listen. And that's
why is that important? Explain to me why preventing the tune-out factor is a crucial thing in your mind here. What exactly that means?
If I come across a program that has a telephone, right now, but I'm over-modulating on this mic, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I can hear it. So like, isn't this annoying?
Mm-hmm.
And how annoying, how much longer is it, how much more annoying would it be until there was another meeting across the hall with someone who was using their mic the right way, and that they would go, and that you'd, you know, actually rather go listen to what they have to say than put up with this.
Well, it depends on what you're saying.
Exactly. And for a lot of our listeners, for those listeners that we are their favorite radio station, that's exactly what happens. They will tolerate dropped mics, bad modulation, phone lines. But there are a lot of people out there that won't. And those people like the content, but they, you know, if they're driving down the street or listening in their car, and all of a sudden, you know, it just isn't pleasing to their ear to listen to technically, they'll go listen to something else. It's like you know, when you know, you could be in the middle of your favorite television program, and you get that, you know, sorry, we're having technical difficulties. Well, you've got, you know, so for a couple of minutes, you know, like, all right, well, this is going to come back in a second. But for that second, let me just switch over and see what the score of the ball game is. So at that point, the score of the ball game might be something that you become more interested in than tuning back to your favorite sitcom.
Can I just jump in here also? I find notwithstanding what Tomas is raising, I agree with the thread of concern that he's raising. I was a little concerned earlier in your presentation when you made a comment about how people don't like commercials on radio, and I wasn't sure what that meant about how we function. I don't think our approach to being a non-commercial radio is because people don't like commercials. It's because we don't want the corporate control over what goes on the content of our station. So I think this is related to what I'm hearing Tomas, you know, raise here, that it's, for me anyway, of course, I would love it if more people listen for more hours, and because of that, they gave more money. But for me, the question here is not that the final defining issue here is not how much money people are giving. It's the content of what we're giving people. If we're giving people good content, then they will want to listen. Then they will encourage their friends and neighbors and coworkers to listen, and then more money will come. That's what I believe. Absolutely. I believe the bottom line is our content, and not. You know, not the bottom line in terms of dollars. Obviously, we have to be concerned about dollars, but I was a little concerned about some of the kind of emphasis that I was picking up from
you. No, I was just saying in general, when you go beyond just, when you look at the greater media, the first thing people cite whenever they say is, you know, I wish I didn't have to watch, you know, a commercial on television, radio, or anywhere. But, Yvonne, ready? So, this is sort of an overview of and we'll talk about three elements of our current audience. Our total listenership, our market by market overview, and the size of our national size of the audience of our national programs. There's some top line information. The cumulative and average quarter hour, 149,800 people listen to KPFA across the week, at least tune in once. At any given quarter hour, in any 15 minute period, any given time, 6,000 people are listening. The share, which really speaks a lot to what proportion of a marketplace. In other words, if all radio listening is 100%. The radio listening done to our stations is that number there in the share column. And then TSL, the time spent listening, that's the number of hours and minutes that people listen. So at WPFW, people in this past spring 2000 listened for five and a half hours per week, 7.5 hours in Los Angeles, and for a total of 805,200 weekly listeners. And at any given time, 38,000 folks are listening to one of our five stations. Just some quarter-hour trends. Quarter-hour audiences are important because that's how many people you're speaking to when the mic's open. And most of the trends are up and down. And I have to apologize. I got the spring 2000 numbers in, but I had a computer glitch this morning and I wasn't able to. But Garland, what was your spring 2000?
Spring 2000. Well, it was back a couple slides, but I believe it was 7400.
74, right. So it's even taller than the fall 99 bar. And it's always good when looking at this. One thing is always fall to fall and spring to spring, but we have all of them up there.
What's the standard error in those
I don't know. It changes for each book, the you know, the statistical. Yeah. And on to our national programming. Did I go back?
Yeah, you need to go back one. Yeah,
there we go. Starting with Democracy Now!, 285,000 people listen to it across the week. That includes our affiliates. At any given time when Democracy Now! Is on the air, 80,800 people are listening to it. And I think that this is sort of an interesting statistic. 79% of the listening to Democracy Now! Is done on the 5 Pacifica stations. And on the remaining 19 affiliates, that's the 21% of the listening is done. So 19 stations account for 21% of the listening, and 5 stations account for 80% of the listening. 79%. Pacifica Network News, a half an hour program, although broadcast in the afternoon rather than the morning. The 9 a.m. time slot for Democracy Now! is a very good hour, so a high time when a lot of people are listening to radio in general. Cuma 188.6 across the week, 57.7 at any given time the program's on. Because more stations carry it, 41, including our 5, with measurable audience. And that's just with measurable audience. That's not the total number of affiliates. There are some of our affiliates that are in unmeasured areas. 63% is done to our stations, and 37% is contributed by our affiliates. So when people don't listen to us, or when we're their second favorite, when they tally up, when they tally up all the time that they listen to their radio stations, and we're number 2 on the list, and we're not number 1, who is number 1? Who do they listen to more than us? And in San Francisco, it's KQED, in Los Angeles, KCRW, Houston, it's KUHF, WRKS, and in New York. Valerie, what's the format of that station? I'm sorry? News?
Music.
Yeah. And in Washington, it's HUR, an urban contemporary, and WAMU, and pretty much a dead heat, the local public radio station, who's an information station. So that's when we're number 2, and who's their favorite. And one of the reasons that this is significant is because these are people who listen to us, who invest a lot of time in us, but not the most amount of time in their listening. These are the people that are in this category. Those are the folks that should be listening more to Pacifica. And when you look at it in total, these are the other stations that folks who listen to our stations listen to across the week. This is a more complete list. I think it's a couple of things that I thought were kind of interesting. WBAI shares about 12% of its, about 12% of the WBAI audience also listens to WABC and KGO. So that's a talker, right?
It's
a right wing talker. So it's sort of an interesting spectrum. They decline as far as percentage goes, but even the third column is about 13-15% of the audience listens to that station. KRBE in Houston?
Music.
And Mark KNX?
All News.
By comparison, in terms of growth and what's happened in the last 5 years, the audience for the NPR news magazines, just the news magazines alone, not the total audience, has increased 4% every year for the last 5 years. And in 5 years, they've gone from 12 million listeners for Morning Edition, All Things Considered, Weekend Edition Sunday, Weekend All Things Considered, to 14.6 million. Now, what I did was take the sharing stations, and that's just the P1 stations, or those first stations that when we're number 2, who's number 1, and so we added up the cumes of each station of the Pacifica stations and of those five sharing stations, the ones that people listen to more than us. And I see we've gone from 638 to 796 in a cumulative listeners, and they've gone from 1.8 million to 2.1. So I think sort of the point of that is that everybody's growing. You know, everyone is growing, and I think that the thing that we have to keep in mind is that our improvement and our audience growth is significant and something to be proud of, but we also have to keep it in context. Whenever we talk about audience sizes, we have to keep in context with the rest of the media environment. So we're growing, and that's a really positive and good sign. And so are the other public radio stations out there in these markets, and that's a really good sign, because that means that the pool of available listeners, the people for whom news and information on the radio is something that they want, that number is growing too. So there's more people out there that we can expose and that we can get to sample our radio stations, and then they can go out and tell their friends and bring more people in to hear our message and to hear our content and our mission and what we believe and stand for. So I'm hugely encouraged by that. And I think that's the good news, is that audience growth, you know, especially time spent listening, is well within our control. And we can implement ways of making people stay with our stations longer. And that I think is really exciting, because that can only be good for us. That can only have people hear more of our content and hear more of our message. Before we move on to part three, any questions?
Anyone want to raise any questions about the material that was just covered? In that case, let's move right along. Thank you.
These come from conversations that we've had at the Administrative Council level to talk about the program task force, so that we can make our programs even better, find out why it is that our listeners listen to us. And so we sort of came up with a set of goals and things that we should talk about and things that we would like to see come out of this project, which is to gather qualitative information about our audience. We know, going over the overview of the audience data, you'll notice that there were some things left out. How much money do they make? How old are they? Those sorts of statistical things we can get that we don't always have the clearest access to. But we don't know things like, what kind of cars do they drive? Do they take mass transit to work, or do they drive to work? We don't know as much things as how many credit cards they have. How many children do they have? Are the children in college? We don't have a good grip on their education level. We don't know how many of them have master's or advanced degrees, or have never completed high school. We don't know how many CDs that they buy. We play music. Does our audience have a higher propensity to buy CDs and music, videotapes? We don't know much about who they are. We also haven't asked, you know, what they think about our current programming. You know, we get a lot of feedback by emails. We get a lot of feedback by other methods, but nothing ever. But we really haven't sat down and said and asked them in a systemic way and said, you know, what do you guys think? We're putting this out there, and why do you like it? Why do you listen to it? What else do they want? The hardest thing you can ever ask a listener is, what else should we do? And right now we're putting out 90 minutes of national programming, and one of the things that excited me about coming to Pacifica was the opportunity to create more programming. Well, what should that programming be? You know, what is it that they want? And we need to find out why when they turn away, why public radio listeners don't listen to our stations. The cum for KQED is 550,000. If people for whom their favorite radio station is KQED and their second favorite is KPFA, why aren't more of that 550,000 also listening to KPFA? And that goes across all the other markets. Why don't folks who have a propensity to listen to the types of programming that we put out come and listen to us as well, and listen to us more? And we also need to know how they use other media. You know, at the time, you know, we'll find out a whole lot about how they feel about satellite radio. You know, we don't know how they use the internet. What do they look for on the internet? So there's a whole bunch of information that we need to gather about these folks. Through that, there's some possible activities that we could talk about, focus groups. And when you go to focus groups, you always want to find people who listen to your service, use your service, and find out what they like, what they don't like. But you also want to find people who don't listen. Expose them to it a little bit and ask them a little bit about it and find out why they don't listen as much. There's additional audience data that we don't purchase could be useful in determining our strategies and our policies. We might decide that there's some specific survey research that we would want to do, phone surveys. And the reason that we want to do all this is because audience and revenue are intertwined. These are the folks that contribute to our radio stations. We are listener-supported radio, so we should be asking the listener and finding out as much about the listener as we can. We believe that there should be an outside project manager who will manage the work plan and the vendors that we would have to contract with to perform these activities. And it also brings in third-party credibility. And what I mean is that we need someone who can look at research and look at the responses that our listeners are telling us. And because we are so close to our mission and our content, and because we live this every day, we need someone who can look at it with a fresh eye and say, these are the sorts of things you need to be taking notice of. Here are some pieces of information that are very important to pay attention to, that because we're in the day-to-day, we may not recognize that as significant. And at the same time, we may focus on things that we feel are very significant, and an outside person who is an expert in research, or someone who's more of a researcher, can sit down and say, those are all very important things, but here's why they line up, and can educate us as well about some of these processes. The day-to-day oversight by the National Program Director, and planning and evaluation of the project by the entire task force.
Excuse me, is the National Program Director different from the